Tonight, we're going to take another deep dive into mezcal. You've probably seen my review of these two mezcals just recently. And today, you're going to meet Sammy, one of the co-founders of this brand, his friend Gigi, and talk about why this mezcal tastes a little different than your average mezcal, and talking about an aging process that you don't normally see. These guys have some great things going on with some amazing tasting mezcals, and you're going to learn a lot about it here. So check this one out. It's tasting tequila with Brad.
It's tasting tequila with Brad.
Well, I am fired up tonight to be here to drink some mezcal and talk to Sammy about this brand. How you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing beautiful, man. How are you?
Oh, man. I'm just excited I get to drink this mezcal that I fell in love with after reviewing it a few weeks ago, and I'm excited to talk about it.
I love it, man. I'm excited to be here, and can't wait to get into it.
So where are you from? Where are you at right now?
I'm born and raised in Miami, Florida. I'm currently actually up in the mountains of North Carolina visiting my parents. They spend their time here, and just visiting them for a week or so and then heading back.
Oh, very cool. All right, we'll do this. Let's tell everybody who you are and what is your relationship to the brand. And while you do that, I'm going to pour this stuff because I want to start drinking.
I love it. Well, I'm gonna join you too. After I go, you can go. So my name is Sammy Halpern. I guess I'll age myself a little bit, but it's my 16th year in the wine and spirits industry. And I love it. For De Solas Mezcal, I act as our CSO and our COO, I guess, technically. I'm our chief strategy officer, and I also liaison with and handle all of our operations for the brand. I liaison Gigi Mervis, who is our founder. I'm a co-founder with her, but she's very much the eyes and the person who started this brand. And, super excited to be here.
Oh, that's awesome. But how'd you guys meet up to be able to start this Mezcal brand?
So Gigi was traveling throughout Mexico. She started a brand in her youth that was a little bit before its time and a kind of fun to talk about, but she started a tequila coconut water in a can. And that's probably about 12 years ago. That was her first project. She started working with this family using organic tequila, true blue weber agave, using real coconut water. And bottling it into, you know, what we know today as RTDs and the RTD boom. And that was her first venture into the category. While she was down there and while she worked with the family, kind of day in and day out, she started to discover mezcal. You know, obviously in the United States, you know, looking at 10, 12 years ago, especially being a young adult in America, you really only knew about tequilas. And mezcal wasn't very popular and honestly still isn't super popular in today's world. And she was down there, she was tasting through different mezcals and being introduced to the product, and then came home and to find, you know, only pretty much mainstream Espadin, which is kind of the complete opposite of what she was tasting down in Mexico. And she obviously tells this story a lot better than I do. She was introduced to this different style of mezcal that was very indigenous to the Mexican community in Mexico. And she wanted to bring those flavors and that identity to the United States. You know, we were only exposed to, again, the mainstream products, and not to say anything negative about those brands because they were kind of the forefront to the industry, especially the mezcal, but, you know, Illegal and some of those brands that kind of were out a very long time ago are a lot different than what we have on the market today. Mm-hmm. And the reason that we are a brand and the reason that we have a niche in the category is because we are so different. You mentioned a little bit before is that this brand is truly meant to bridge the gap between tequila mezcal and also meant to be enjoy as a true mezcal. And that's the beauty of it. We, Gigi and I, on a personal level, were introduced through mutual friends in the industry, a friend of mine who owns a chain of bars and restaurants in South Florida. I was a part of a startup brand in the whiskey space that we had just actually sold to a large supplier. And my role within that brand was to build and develop our distribution network, build and develop our marketing and sales. And we took that brand from a very, very small brand in the whiskey space to a very large brand in the whiskey space. And unfortunately, we were purchased. It's kind of the thing that happens a little bit in the industry. And our our team was effectively replaced a little bit, and I had the opportunity, I guess, to leave, then to be introduced to Gigi and help her start. She actually started the brand a little bit before me, and then I jumped in, and you know, it's kind of been, you know, head, feet, chest, knees, and toes all forward ever since.
That's fantastic. So what year did the brand really get started?
So she started the brand honestly in 2020, and we all kind of know the year of 2020 and COVID. So things slowed over that time period. She launched a brand in New York, and we kind of like to say that we really, really got a chance to launch a brand in 2022. She was selling the brand and pretty much exclusively in New York, you know, here and there to, you know, friends in the industry, etc. But then in 22, we were blessed with a national contract from Southern Wine and Spirits and able to expand the brand. We were able to, you know, launch into 6 markets in the United States where we still thrive in currently. And we have the ability to grow, and we can talk a little bit more about this, but our focus really is to go deeper within those markets. You know, we're still kind of thinking, we still think, and I still believe that we're just hitting the surface within those markets. And it wouldn't do the brand justice to start to try to, you know, spread it out too thinly. And yeah, that's kind of a little bit of where we are right now.
That's fantastic. That's a great concept in building the brand. I see so many tequila brands where their goal is to get into 50 states without any support to do anything within that state. And you got it on some shelves, but you got to drive deep into on-premise to really make products move on a regular basis. So that's good that you're focusing on your core states and then growth from there. That's a great idea. Tell me a little bit about the name. What does the name mean and where did it come from?
You know, it's funny. I was actually going to jump into that a little bit on my end too. The brand and our identity is built around the sun. And you're seeing, I think, obviously a little bit more of the word soul being played off of a little bit, the sun meaning soul in Spanish. And de solas is actually meant to be said separately, de solas, of the sun. That's our name. It's the reason why our plant is so unique. It grows in the deserts of San Luis, but not just the deserts. It's grown in the rainforest. It grows on the side of hills. You know, wild agave is wild agave. You know, when we see these larger agave farms within this tequila category, what makes us so unique, again, is that our agaves grow wildly in acres and acres of land. And each one of them individually is unique.
So let's talk about, before we dive into the agave, let's talk about the region a little bit. Because we all think of mezcal, we think Oaxaca, right? So where is the region that you're growing in relation to Oaxaca?
So I would say it's completely different. And transparently, it really is. And if I were to compare, and not to kind of keep on doing this, but I would compare us to tequila. So our region actually shares a border with where tequila is grown, where all blue Weber agave is grown.
Is next to Guanajuato or next to Jalisco?
So it's a state line. You know, there's seven states that can grow mezcal in the state of Mexico, or in the country of Mexico, and their state lines. So we actually share a state line. They're very, very close within the region and very close within altitude, which is, again, a lot of effects like sunlight, even, you know, again, kind of the climate and certain things. So our agaves are grown in very similar conditions that blue Weber agave is grown in. So yeah, we're Salmiana agave. We're from San Luis, and we hang our hat on that, and we're not going to change that. And again, like we grow a little bit, I guess, in similar climates to where tequila is grown. And that's, again, kind of what makes us a little unique.
Yep. From what I read, it's around 4,000 feet elevation, which is very similar to the Valley of Amatitan. And this is, like you said, this is a wild, non-cultivated agave that takes, in some cases, up to 25 years before they can be harvested. Is that right?
100%. You know, I would say the oldest ones are in probably the most unique areas that aren't getting a lot of sunlight. Maybe they're more hidden. Maybe they're grown more so in like the rainforest where they're getting almost like too much water at certain times and they need to be dried out. Yeah. Anywhere between like 10 and 25 years is when we cultivate. And it's all based on when the mezcalero believes that the mezcal should be, you know, harvested, and they have their own little science. And I wish I knew more. I try to learn as much as I can every time I get to talk to those guys. And you know, again, I'm just kind of a piece of the puzzle.
I hear, you know, about wild agaves like this. How does one mezcalero or Jimador claim that, like, I know that's there, and in 10 years, that one's going to be ready? How does that take place? Is this based on land ownership, or do they just all kind of work together?
I mean, they definitely all work together. It's very much a very family focused style of, let's call it like being in business, right? Like, I think it's a beautiful idea, and the way they do things is very much like, you know, we own this almost together in a certain way. But yes, like there is acreages of agave farms that our distillery owns, that the family owns, that we work with them on to pretty much accumulate over time. And that's where our agaves come from.
Wow. And I'm going to assume same as other agave harvesting, Jimadora, Koa, cutting off the pincas to turn it into a piña.
Yep.
Do they have in Mezcal, do you have different levels of Jima or cut? Like, is there, like in tequila, there's Baja, there's media, there's large. Do they do the same thing in Mezcal?
I think that there's less of a science to it. It's more of a feeling. And again, some because they're harvested at such different times, as far as not meaning how ripe they are or et cetera. It's more so like the age. So I think the age determines on the size of the piña, how they cut it, and how they split it. I think it's more of, again, kind of like a feeling and a science on their end. Manuel is, I think, the third, if not the fourth, mezcalero in his family. And he's perfected this craft with his team. And, you know, again, just very blessed to be working with him and his family.
What was the process in finding a palenque or taberna, whichever term they're using in that area? How hard was it to find a family to work with and decide these are the people that we want to do this with?
It's a funny story. Again, this is a Gigi story, and I'm regurgitating it. But so the family that she worked with on the tequila project, their cousin weirdly connected them with Manuel after Gigi's tequila project. She was kind of looking for something else, something she went through the process of tasting all these beautiful mezcals and was looking for a unique mezcal, and they were assisting because they had been working together for so long, and they connected and they sent samples, and she was tasting through, I forget the number of initial samples of the mezcal, and she landed directly on this, and we haven't changed anything to like one bit.
Okay, that's awesome. Okay, you haven't had time to pour. I've made you talk the whole time, and I've just let this rest, so I'm going to go ahead and dive into some of this.
I'm going to pour something that you may not have seen yet. Maybe if you looked at our Instagram, but this is, since I'm wearing black, I pulled out my black bottle.
Very cool. I did see those on the website.
This is, this is a fun project.
What? And tell me about that one.
This one, I had to do a lot of convincing. This is one of my favorite stores because this is a bit of my influence on the brand. I think that, you know, Gigi's influence is very much that green bottle, and my influence is very much some of the aged products because of my whiskey background. But I went to Manuel with this idea. We talked about it, and he told me, and I'm getting kind of chills, to be honest, kind of talking about it. He told me, as long as when you taste whatever you make, that you know that you're drinking what we made together. Meaning, like, as soon as you taste these aged products, as soon as you taste that Reposado, or what I've just poured is our single barrel Añejo, is that you can still taste the initial heritage of our initial Blanco. And I said, deal. And he goes, all right, come back to me with some samples and we'll taste and, you know, we'll discuss it. And I started doing aging. I learned from an amazing woman in the whiskey industry about barrel aging and how influence on barrels change a certain spirits. And so I acquired multiple different types of barrels, and we started to, you know, age and test and taste. And through that information, we landed on pretty much the softest barrel we could get. And meaning, so the barrels were used for American bourbon, which they're charred to a certain level. There's level 3 char, level 4 char, level 5 char. We landed on level 4 alligator, which is the way they char the barrel. But then also used for Añejo tequila. So it was used for American bourbon, which is, you know, between 2 and 4 years of aging, moonshine inside that barrel. Then it was aged with a Blanco tequila for over 2 years to make an Añejo tequila. And then they've now made our aged mezcals. We acquired, I think, over 30 barrels, and we haven't filled all of them yet, but we own them. And that Reposado is a blend of 3 of those barrels. And this is actually a single barrel. So,
you know, a single barrel Añejo mezcal is something that you don't hear a lot in the industry.
Definitely not.
That's pretty cool that you're doing that. I'm a fan of Blanco products to find that core flavor like you're talking about. And what I love most about an aged agave spirit is if the flavor is just a frame around the picture of what agave is. I heard Carlos Camarena give the best explanation of aging tequila. And he said, you know, the agave is the picture. And if you're going to make it a reposado, picture that picture's hanging on a wall and the reposado is a thin frame around it. It's just adding some nuance to the photo, to the picture, the painting of agave. And if you do an añejo, it's a little bit bigger frame than the repo frame. You're supposed to notice the frame a little bit, but it's still just framing agave with maybe some pretty wood. And if you do an extra añejo, that's a bigger frame, maybe with some gold leaf and some carving and a really beautiful frame. And remember, nobody goes to a museum to stare at a freaking frame. It's about the agave that's the most important. And I thought that is such a great explanation, because when you taste your mezcal, it has such a unique flavor to it that I want to get into the production of it a little bit that makes it taste like this, but it tastes like agave. I really like that. And when I tasted the repo for the first time, the first thing I noticed is I could taste the Blanco in it, and it just had this wood nuanced flavor. It actually, to me, and I think it's maybe the char, but it added a little smoke to the flavor where there isn't any at all in this mezcal. And I'm like, okay, that's got to be barrel influence that adds just a little bit of a roasted smoky note to it, which I did like. I think it was very pleasant, and the nose on it is great too. It takes this really vegetal, fruity minerality and amps it up to where there's just like a little bit of barrel, a little bit of caramel that I pick up in there. And I think it's really good.
Thank you. And I guess your explanation also, to go back to it, on the framing of the picture, I think that's a beautiful way to put it. I think it's, I learned this, I played college baseball, and one of my coaches always kind of said, keep it simple, stupid. And like keeping it as simple as possible, just using really good agaves, using the proper distillation process, using an ancestral style, and releasing the product. And that's really what we've tried to do.
Yeah, I think you've nailed it. I love the bottle. The green of the bottle kind of, to me, leads the witness in tasting, because your agave is very, or your Blanco is very green. It has these really cool vegetal notes that I don't know that I've ever got in a mezcal before. And I think that's because in some cases it is buried by that smoky note. So let's talk about that. What was the process in coming up with, I want to make a mezcal that isn't covered in smoke for the person drinking it?
The answer is yes, but also I don't think that was the purpose. I think, again, the purpose was to try to open up the mind of the consumer and allow them to understand that not everything, like you mentioned, like your friends, not every mezcal is going to be this huge smoke bomb in your face. There's beautiful, you know, blends of different agave plants that are gorgeous, and they're not overly smoked, and they're not too influenced by smoke. And our region is different. They use their ancestral style of making mezcal is relative to the way tequila is made, and whether the pit cooking of the agaves underground is the reason why some mezcals are more smoky than others, to be determined. But we use clay ovens to roast the agaves, and we use a double copper pot still that has been in the family for generations. And, you know, I begged to see the inside of it, and they wouldn't let me, but, you know, that thing's been there for years, and it's not too much technology. It's not like looking at, you know, some of, you know, today's, you know, brand new distillation processing facilities. It's very much, you know, what you see is what you get. And it doesn't look very impressive, but it gets the job done. And, you know, it helps us produce this beautiful product. And, you know, I wouldn't change anything about it.
But you're using more of a steam heated horno oven versus a wood fire or a underground cook, right?
Correct. So they're these big clay, you know, again, ovens, and that's how the agaves are heated.
Okay. And then what kind of milling process do you do after let's back up. Do you know what your cook time is? Are you in that 48, 72 hour cook time, or is it even longer?
It's about a 72 hour cooking process. I think it's actually 71 hours is the time that I heard last time. And we use Tohono method to crush.
Okay. So then you're crushing with Tohono. So then probably fermenting with fibers. In your fermentation
with fibers and stainless steel.
In stainless steel, okay. Yep. And then what's your normal fermentation time length Because I know in mezcal, a lot of times it's a little bit longer than it is tequila.
Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of varies with the process, and this is not an exact science. You know, we actually had a, I'll tell you a funny story. We had a batch that released of our Blanco that, you know, it ended up being a little bit more smoky than, you know, our normal, you know, mezcal is. But mezcal is not perfect, and right. It can't be overly proof. Every batch is going to be different. That's why we number each of the bottles. So there's actually a bottling date on that bottle, and there's a number on that bottle. You can kind of find it. The number's there.
Oh, yeah, like this is 2038, it says.
Yep.
And then the
bottling date should be at the bottom. Yeah, right where your left thumb is.
7/4/2026.
Yep, there you go. So that was pretty much our most recent bottling. We just did a bottling as well. So yeah, that's almost our most recent bottling. And again, it can change. You know, not every batch is going to be exact. It can't be. It's not like we're adding certain things to make certain flavors. It is what it is. It goes right into the bottle, and you know, you get it and you love it. And that's why things kind of change. You know, our cost of goods just went up by, you know, 20%. And you know, we're trying to not make the end consumer feel that at all, just because I don't think it's really fair. I mean, listen, like we're trying to build a heritage brand. We're trying to not do what I did with my last project, where, you know, the brand gets sold, the team gets distinguished, and, you know, the brand gets demised. We're trying to build a family heritage brand that's going to be around for a long time.
So the stills that you have, are those steam as well, or are they wood fired?
Yeah, steam.
Okay. So we are removing that process does remove some of that smoke process that's going to be inherent. You know, there are some tequila brands today that have gone back to fire oven and wood fire still. And now you get that smoky quality in a tequila, which I'm a fan. I'm a fan of all of it. Like I'm a fan as long as it's not been made with a diffuser and a column still. Outside of that, I love all of them, right? So, and that are clean produced products, you know what I mean? But, I think it's really cool. So when you do, when it's all done, you've distilled. Now, is there like a resting period that you just kind of let it rest before you go to bottling, or do you go to bottling pretty quickly?
Transparently, we don't have a bottling facility at the distillation center. So it does get transferred from there to our bottling facility. So it may sit in the stainless steel or the vats, the plastic vats. It depends on what's available. Sometimes the stainless, we've experienced that it can maybe leach a little bit into the flavor. So we use the traditional vats, and they sit for maybe a day or two, depending on how busy our bottling facility is, and because they've grown in capacity, but they're still a very busy facility. So not purposefully, it's more so, you know, we try to get into the bottle and as soon as we can.
Sure. So not like we do a stainless steel rest for 45 days, or, you know, some different spirits do that on a regular basis. So let's talk about your barreling. So do you have, like a lot of places I go visit, the barrels are kind of in a cellar or a little bit in an underground covered facility. Are you doing something similar to that?
In a certain way, it's actually aged at our bottling facility. I think one thing that we've done maybe differently from some of the other brands is we don't proof prior to entering the barrel. So all of our barrels are, we actually come off the still at 113.8 proof. So it's a little bit hot. And they go right into the barrel. And some, I've experienced some brands may proof down before they go into barrel, etc. We go full strength right into barrel, and then they age in our bottling facility. It's actually very close to Jalisco. What I will say that is very unique that I learned. So the woman I learned from is Shailen Gammon. I will shamelessly plug her to the day. She's an amazing woman in the whiskey space. She fought very hard to where she is. And she taught me a lot about what I know currently that within the barrel aging world. So I purposefully put all of our barrels in different places in our rick house. Let's call it a rick house. It's to be relatable. And the reason for that is because each of them create different microclimates. Each barrel is going to create different nuance and different flavor profiles in that exact barrel. So my bottling facility and the aging facility wanted to kill me, but you know, I begged and I pleaded and I kicked and I screamed, and they allowed me to do it only because I was there to help move the barrels physically. And we put the barrels in different spots, and our single barrel program is, it's not really a program. It's more, we just released a couple of single barrels, is a testament to that. And our barrel number one is completely different than our barrel number two. And our barrel three will be completely different than those two other barrels, which I think is, again, a testament to, you know, the difference and the nuance. So that Reposado is a blend of three barrels. That was our first batch. And then when we just bottled another blend of three barrels, it'll be, it's not going to taste exactly like that, right? And it's going to taste similar, but it won't taste exactly the same.
Very cool. Yeah, people that follow bourbon, I live in Indiana, right? So I'm a couple hours from Louisville. Mm-hmm. I've been to, you know, many places on the Bourbon Trail. And, you know, to hear them talk about that this spot in this Rick House is always going to be this brand because these barrels taste different. You know, it's like, well, wait a minute. It's just the same barrel. It's just the same mash, right? And it's like, yeah, it's the microclimate where that barrel lives that makes the flavor be like it is. And I've always asked that in tequila, like, are you guys rotating barrels? You know, because a lot of the Rick Houses will rotate barrels. They're like, no. And like, do you guys pick like certain spots to be better barrels? And they're like, no. Like, it hasn't been a thing in tequila. And you're the first person in agave spirits that is talking about that special place is a special thing for different barrels. So that's pretty cool that you've brought that to the agave spirits world.
Thank you. I think that working on relatability is big. And if I can convince a bourbon consumer or a scotch consumer just to try our product, that's a win. Even if they hate it, even if they're like, they spit it out, this is disgusting, we still have information and that consumer can either love it or hate it. You're going to have one guy that's sitting at our table, it's going to be like, this is the best thing I've ever had. And there's going to be one guy that says, this is the worst thing I've ever had. But I mean, that's the beauty of the world, right? You're entitled to your opinion. We all taste different things. And I think that it's unique within the agave space. And something else that I can't avoid it, it gives me chills every time I say it, we're the first to ever age Saumiana in this way. I think it's taboo, and I admit it, and I accept it. We should not be aging this product. But we are putting our best foot forward to try to be a simple, unique, and an exquisite brand. I think the consumer is a little confused by our category, and it kind of shies them away from it a little bit. And being as simple as possible, I think, for us is unique. And it's allowed the consumer to relate to us. And every time you drink our product, whether it's the Blanco, whether it's the Reposado, whether it's a single barrel, you know that you're drinking our product. And I don't want to change that. We don't want to make a Cushy or an Espadín or a blend or a Barril. We really want to be the Saumiana Agave Mezcal brand. That's who we are. That's what we're sticking to it. We're sticking to our guns and we're going down with the ship.
I love it. So here's a question. What is your journey personally from brown spirits and getting into agave spirits? Because I live in bourbon country, you know, where me drink bourbon only, you know. I have a lot of those guys. And then they leave here drinking maybe an extra añejo. They come back drinking an añejo. And if I have it my way, and a year from now, they're drinking a high-proof tequila, right? And a Blanco. I always say I do what wine people do. Like, I like a Moscato or maybe an ice wine. And my friends want me to drink the driest wine possible. That's their goal. Yeah. So I do that in our spirits. What's your journey coming from the brown spirits world to the agave spirits world?
I think the consumer is just different, you know, and I honestly think we just need more educators like yourself, you know, and like us and our team. I think that American bourbon and American whiskey as a whole is very understood and very accepted. Mm.
There's a lot of
educators, and we call them champions. There's so many guys and gals that love to show their new whiskeys off, and they're these like beautiful bottles, and they love to have people over and taste them. And I think we're just kind of cracking the surface within the agave world with people doing that. I think we get a little bit of a bad rap. You know, you have your 1942 and your Clos Azul drinkers that are in nightclubs and drinking half of it and spilling half of it, and that's not what the real agave consumer is. You know, the real agave collectors and consumers are looking for unique items, and it's honestly, I think it's a testament to why that brand right behind you, Lost Lore, has grown so much in the last 2 years. It's the consumers is thirsty for something unique, and they want something different, and they don't want to be shoved these mass produced brands. And we're trying. I'm riding the coattails of people like Lost Lore and brands like Lost Lore, and you know, just trying to take our small piece of the pie.
That's awesome. Now, okay, I'm gonna dig more into your personal journey because you coming from drinking bourbon. How did you get to going, okay, I want to try agave spirits, or have you always been open to lots of spirits?
I say that I think I've got a unique history in the industry. My first job in the wine and spirits industry was selling, we call them low velocity wines to like Publix's and Winn-Dixie's,
okay,
Walgreens. And that was my first job in the industry. I woke up at 4 a.m, you know, sold, you know, $3 wine to, you know, Winn-Dixie buyers. And that's where I started. From there, I got to sell, you know, brands like Don Julio when it was just kind of first starting. I had to beg people to bring in, you know, Don Julio Reposado, Don Julio Añejo, beg. We had to use our Diageo money to like get placements of 1942 because no one wanted it, because no one was drinking it at the time. And I was really intrigued by it. I really liked the product. I enjoyed tasting it. I enjoyed drinking it. I worked for a small company called Louis Vuitton Moët Hennessy, the Moët Hennessy division. We were a part of, and I got to be a little bit a part of, the team that launched Volcan. And that was like my first immersion into tequila and understanding a lot more about it other than, you know, a cool brand like Don Julio. And I think that was a kind of like my first eye-opening moment on real brands, real heritage, real understanding, because I understood the other things, you know, whiskeys and wines and certain things. And I was, again, lucky enough to go and be a part of, really, really a part of a team that built the whiskey brand. And I always wanted to be in the agave space. And, you know, Gigi gave me the opportunity.
That's awesome. Yeah, my journey started in tequila back in like 2003. And then I shifted kind of to bourbon for a little while. And then and I've been back down this complete rabbit hole of all agave spirits ever since. And it's very seldom I drink anything other than an agave spirit. So that's very cool. So where do you think the mezcal industry is going? Because you've had this huge growth in the mezcal industry. And I know it hasn't plateaued by any means like other spirits have, but that mega growth has slowed down a little bit. Do you think you're going to continue in that same growth trajectory that it's been over the last maybe 24 months?
Well, I mean, I hope so. I would say I've seen some numbers over the last 12 months that aren't indicating, you know, really kind of, you know, multiple percent growth and maybe even a bit of a downtick. But what really gives me hope, and I'll allude back to, you know, the Lost Lore growth, the Zumador growth, even the Fortalezas, the G4s of the world in the agave space or in the tequila space, people, again, kind of seeking and searching for unique products that are different than the mainstream brands that they see on, you know, everyday shelves. And with that, it gives me, again, hope that they're going to go down the path of finding these beautiful tequilas, and they're inspired by their uniqueness and start to understand a bit more of the agave world and, you know, stumble upon mezcal and stumble upon, you know, a Solomillano agave from San Luis called the Solas.
Yeah, I have to say that's what's happened to me, you know, as learning more and more about the spirits, and then somebody saying, here, try this Sotol, try this Ricea, you know, and then falling down the rabbit hole of mezcal it's really a deeper rabbit hole than tequila, because you have so many plants and so many processes that are different. And this is, you know, there's maybe three or four mezcals that I have that I kind of lean into when I'm in that mezcal mood. Yeah. But this has become something that I'm in a tequila mood still, but I'm looking for something that just has that a little bit different twist to it. And this is, as you can see, I've only had it a few days or maybe a week, and I've been plowing away on this puppy. So it's one of those to me that's very drinkable, and I'm always excited to share it with people because it is something that's different, but still that mezcal agave flavor. So it's pretty cool. So 100%. What? So this one, you guys are doing this one, that was it, 40 ABV. Are you guys ever going to do like a higher proof Blanco to kind of show off that still strength flavor?
Man, you've asked, every time I think about something to bring up next, you've asked me the question like just before it. So I mentioned our brand is relative to the sun, and we've kind of built an identity around it. And you can see, I guess even on in front of you, you have our Blanco, which is like our, you know, our peak of the sun in the sky, right? It's fully up there. It's shining. It's noon. It's the you know, it's everything the sun has to offer. You're getting all your vitamin D. It's all there. And then as the sun starts to set, you get different tones and you get different identities of the sun and the moon and the land. And so previously when we were creating these items, you know, our black single barrel, our white reposado, like this is almost like sunset and almost the moon. The reposado is like sunset, you know. And we've just created something that we're super, super proud of, and we cannot wait to release. It's called the Sola Cien, and it'll be 100 proof Blanco. And that'll be kind of like our trilogy, but it'll be a bit of our trilogy of, you know, everything that we have to offer, and not everything, but it's a lot of what we have to offer. So you'll have our full family of products. It'll start with our Blanco 80 proof. It'll go to our 100 proof Cien. Took us a while to get the word Cien approved, but we will be called the Sola Cien.
Very cool.
And then in our aging process, it starts with our ceramic. Truthfully, because our color variance changes so much, we went with ceramic. We didn't want people to think that it's something else, etc. So we go into our reposado, which is a 96 proof. And then our single barrels are everything we have to offer. These go into the barrel at 113.8 proof, and we take them out at whatever they are proofed at, and we bottle. So all of our single barrels are pretty much around 104 proof.
Oh, wow. So they're all truly cask strength.
Cask strength. Everything we got to offer.
Very cool. Now, how often are you going to do this single barrel projects? Is that like just an ongoing, you'll keep releasing different ones?
We're going to have a single barrel every year. I think that if we start to do too much of it, we're going to lose our identity a little bit. I hope that it grows in the future. I guess I can tease something. We're tasting some other variants of barrels from different regions, you know, a French barrel. We're going to taste them and kind of see how they come out. But right now, it's going to be everything that we've released before. It's going to be an ex-bourbon, ex-añejo tequila barrel that's aged for at least 2 years, and it'll be a two-year-old single barrel.
Wow. Okay, I gotta get my hands on one of those. I can't wait to try it. That's very, very cool.
Our first single, shameless plug, our first single barrel is completely sold out. We're super stoked on that. That is official. Our second barrel, we have, I think, close to 40 bottles left of inventory. Wow. Only 200, well, it depends on the barrel, but only 214 bottles of that barrel was produced. We just did a bottling of our third barrel, which will be released, you know, sometime at the end of the year around the holidays. That barrel only produced 208 bottles. So that's, you know, again, we're bottling at cask strength, so very limited. And we're super stoked.
It's very cool. So where can people find these bottles? If they wanted to find some of them that are out there, what markets are you in? And if they're not in that market, how can they get your product?
So we're distributed properly in 6 states. We're in Florida, we're in Texas, we're in Georgia, we're in Tennessee, we're in New York, we're in New Jersey, we're in Colorado. But the beautiful thing that I think that's come from COVID is an opening of direct-to-consumer sales. So if you go on our website, you can legitimately buy this right off our website, and we can deliver it right to your door.
Fantastic.
In any market, I guess everything but the 6 of the control states we can't deliver to. So we can deliver to 44 markets in the United States.
Yeah, they have to go across the county, across the state line, to go buy it from a buddy, right?
Yeah.
That's what we tell the Ohio folks. Come to Indiana. We've got it over here.
Well, we can deliver to Indiana. We can deliver. Can we deliver Ohio? I don't think so.
Yeah, Ohio's a control state, so.
Yeah, but Michigan's a control state. We can deliver there. North Carolina's a control state.
Okay.
We can deliver to some control states, yeah. So if you're interested, I would say just check it out on the website. Our team we have in Florida, it's fantastic. They do their best to liaison with different partners to make sure that they can get it. It might be a little bit extra if you're in a control state, but they can get it to you.
You also do a great job with your social media and marketing. Like, you guys always have really good stuff out there, and I will say this, I did the reviews of these, and the amount of DMs I got from people who love your product that follow my channel, it was like, this is the best. This is amazing. You know, there was several conversations with several friends of mine that I had never tried it before. And they were like, you haven't had that? Like, they were shocked that I hadn't had it. And so the response was really overwhelming of the amount of people that reached out. And I thought that was really cool. So you have a really good following of connoisseurs that really dig your product and are very, very excited about it.
I would say that you guys run our industry, man. Like, you are the educators, you're the heartbeat of a lot of what we're trying to do. And I appreciate you. I appreciate you know, anyone who reached out and who's like within this community of educators that I'm sure you have another full-time job and you want to do this on the side. And this is something that is, you know, it's, again, it's super important to, for us as a brand to understand, again, kind of like your personality and the way you do things. And I appreciate it. And, you know, from not just me, but from all of our, of the small brands in the industry that, you know, you give a boost to, I really appreciate it. And thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm a mortgage guy for a real job every day. So just booking loans. I've been doing it for 30 years, but tequila and agave spirits makes it a lot easier at the end of my difficult mortgage day.
I love it. Well, hopefully, you know, I'll be able to buy a nice house one day and I'll call you.
There you go. I'm licensed in Florida. I'll be able to hook you up.
All right, man. I love it.
Well, I want to say thanks so much for doing this. And I'm going to actually pour a little bit more of this Repo to salute. And thanks for, first of all, thanks most of all for the bottles, right? I really appreciate it. It's always nice when somebody reaches out and says, hey, you know, would you like to try our product? And I'm thank you for trusting me in trying the product and allowing me to talk about it. And then for you to take your time tonight and come on and talk about it is really appreciative, very thankful. And I think there's some great information for the people that watch my shows that, you know, maybe are a little more tequila and a little mezcal curious and they want to learn about something. So thank you for taking that time tonight. I appreciate it.
100%. Anyone who's willing to gamble and try our product, I'll give you a code. It's called Partners. Type it into our website, order a bottle. You'll get, I think it's 15% off. But yeah, you guys are all of our partners. So that's why the code exists.
Awesome. Well, I want to say cheers, my friend.
Cheers, man.